Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to A Novel Beginning. Good evening, wherever you are tuning into. We are so thankful you are here. This is the show where we show and tell all about the true author's reality. I am your host, Sierra Rice, and as always, I have the incredible Danielle M. Morsino with me. This episode is going to be a deep dive, perhaps share a little more than you actually expected, about what happens after you sign. It's one of those fun things where the mask finally slips. You've been wined, you've been dined, you have signed, and now you get to see how it's really like. So let me bring Danny in. Danny, how are you doing this wonderful evening?
How are you, Miss Chelsea? I'm so happy to be here and finally discussing this. That was my evil laugh. I didn't do it very well, but that was an evil laugh, just to say I did it well.
I think to perfect an evil laugh, you have to have the layer first. But I think you really nailed it. It was perfect. It was great. You did a really great job. We'll work on the layer later. It's a later date kind of
thing.
Got it. It's a process.
Got it.
Yeah. This one.
We'll say I did it.
This is
cool.
You nailed it. This episode, I know we have both been waiting for. You have more experience in this field than I do. But let's start with talking about the wining and dining that a publisher does for you. When you submit that manuscript and they are exciting, all of these grand things for you, you are standing, talking to them. What was your first experience like? You can either do both publishers or your first one, however you want to do it. Tell me all about your wine and dine experience.
Well, my first publisher, there was no wine and dine because it was a friend of mine, and she was just like, hey, look, I do nonfiction, but I love your let's do fiction. It was kind of, there was no wine and dine. It was just like, hey, we're going to do this. Second one, there was a lot of BS. It was, oh my God, we love you. We love this book. This is so wonderful. Let's do Zoom meetings, and we're going to be so transparent. Yeah, okay. Transparency was what they sold me on. Was
perfect.
You know,
and
super
what
transparent.
Was it? What was it about the transparency that got you? Because I have spoken to a lot of authors over the last couple of weeks, and they assume transparency is given. So you have a unique experience. You've gotten both sides of it, where you walked in head first, you were ready to go, they were taking a chance, and then you got pitch transparency. So what was it you were pitched?
Because the first one, my first publisher was a friend of mine, and this is where my naivete and everything took center stage, and I've learned from that. Because it was a friend, and it was a friend of years upon years upon years. It was a best friend, like in weddings together, that kind of thing. And I had the back end. I had, you know, all the codes to Ingram and whatnot. I thought in my, you know, all my infinite wisdom that it was just, of course I have transparency. I can see what Ingram's doing. I can see the book orders coming in. I can see all of this. So the transparency was assumed because I could see it. Little did I know that you have to understand Ingram. Like, you have to know how to go in, how to print the reports, how to see everything. I thought I was seeing it. I did not know there was more to it. So that was my mistake.
Okay.
So when everything went sour, and I realized there was much more money coming in and all this other stuff, and there was the international sales and whatnot. When I was pitched transparency by the second publisher, it was so refreshing. I had a contract that was all spelled out. I took it to the lawyers and whatever. I thought, okay, there's no way I can get screwed over because they're telling me they're going to be transparent. I told them this is what happened with the first publisher. I don't want this to happen. And I was debating at that point self-publishing. I was not necessarily going to go with a traditional publisher. And they were aware of all of this. So the idea that they built their whole business model on transparency because they were both authors and they understood, I really thought, once again, in my infinite wisdom of naivete, that they wouldn't screw anybody over. You know, they get it. And they promised, you know, royalty statements every month that would spell it all out. It was, like I said, it was this whole bag, you know, bill of goods on transparency, and this is how we'll spell it out for you, and here's your contract. And once I had that contract, I thought, okay, I have a legal document. They can't screw me over because I have this.
Of course not.
You know, it was like those old school of rock, you know, things where it's like I'm just the bill sitting on Capitol Hill. You know, I thought, I have a legal document. This is so great. And I just thought, nobody can mess with me now. Oh, my God,
not.
I was such an idiot. And then months went by, and there was no royalty statement. And then, like, 7 months
Now,
went
during
by.
These months, you had gone through and you had republished. There was that gap period that I don't think authors understand or aspiring authors understand is just because you signed a contract, you didn't immediately start getting those payments, right? You go through and you get your release date, and then after your release date, you're like, here comes the money. This is what we're doing.
I was just like, and I'm going to sit back and ching, because my first edition had sold so well. And the funny thing is I was still complaining with the first edition. I thought, oh my God, I'm only 88,000 on Amazon's list. I was upset with that number. What I would have given for that number now. I thought that was a horrible number. And I was consistently, out of all the books on Amazon, I was number 88,000. That wasn't even including the niches. I didn't understand those niches. I was number 88,000, and I would get down to like 50,000. And I would complain about that number. Oh, my God, what I would give for that number. I republished the second edition of Locked Out of Heaven. And they picked the release date. And I started to wonder things when I called and said, I have an opportunity to go face-to-face with producers of the Drew Barrymore show. I've been invited to sit and do a pre-interview. I really need, like, just one copy of Locked Out of Heaven. And I turned everything in, and they were like, okay, yeah, great, no problem. Yeah, we'll get this to you. And I'm like, okay, because I'm going to the show. And they gave me a postcard with the title spelled wrong.
Perfect.
And
I love it.
Okay. No. This is cute, but no. And they couldn't produce it. And I went, okay, but the book comes out in 2 weeks. Like, you can't get me a... And I'd given them plenty of notice, and they couldn't. And I walked in with the first edition, and I gave it to them on audiobook. And they were just like, okay, we already have your first edition. It's somewhere on set on the shelves. And I left after talking to a producer for a couple minutes. And I knew just at that point the chance was gone. Like, you know, it was one of those moments where you kind of see it go up in smoke. And you're like, and
okay.
Here it goes. That's awesome.
I like it.
Book one came out, and then they released book two without telling me in November, I think. In November or December it came out, and there were still no royalty statements.
Okay, so I have a copy moment. You ready?
Yeah.
This is just on releases. My third book and my fifth book were turned in because – or sixth. I don't know. Third and sixth because I started doing the novellas. They came out on the same day. How about they came out on the same day? Three weeks after I had turned it in, hadn't been through editing – there had been a mistypo. I didn't even know until somebody who reads my books had contacted me and said she got a surprise.
A surprise?
She got a surprise. I was like, heck yes, you did. Yeah.
Explain.
So I had, as you know, I had done my first novella. Which was Broken Beginnings. It's the story of Thane, who is Avery's adopted brother, partner in crime, overbearing brother, that type of person. We had turned it in, all because I wanted to do Silas's story. So I turned in Thane and Silas at the same time. Editors didn't know what to do. Threw them in a tizzy because I had turned in three books within 2 weeks of each other. So they didn't know what to do. They were going through. We worked with a small publisher, hybrid publisher, So they got it and they put it into their system. Good to go. We're getting ready. There's a step after that. You don't just submit your book to them and it magically goes out.
No.
So they had gone through and somebody had apparently accidentally updated or uploaded the broken beginnings to be published instead of edited. So it went live the same day as Bargaining, which was, you know, the third novel in the series. And so I got, I think, 4 or 5 messages. And they were like, oh, my gosh, we're so excited. We wanted to know about Thane. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you don't even know this is coming because it was supposed to be a surprise. All of the novellas were supposed to be a surprise, that whole thing. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what's going on? And so she sent me a screenshot. She got the upload or got the update. There wasn't even a surprise of a pre-order. Somebody had accidentally clicked the wrong button and submitted it to be published on Amazon. So it went live everywhere. And few people know this. I turn in 99.9% of the time first drafts. That's what I give my editors. They deal with it. They love it. It works. Well, they actually don't love it. They hate it very much. But that's what happens. That's the way that my writing process works, the way that I put it together. And so I immediately texted the editor and the publisher, and I'm like, hey, guys, do you know this book is live right now? And nobody knew what was happening. It was like I just set fire in the entire organization, and everybody was scrambling. You ever see that meme where, like, SpongeBob is freaking out and in the rain? That is what I did. And they were like, no, this was totally planned. This is fine. Meanwhile, in the background, because I'm on a call, they're like, what happened? Who did this? Whose login was it? And they're freaking out, but it's live. People have bought it. It's out there. That was my accidental, I had no idea, release thing. But continue with your stuff. Yeah, that still traumatizes me. I'm like, you sure this is going to the right person? I want proof it got emailed to the right person.
Oh, that just hurts. There's just so many levels of pain in that.
So many levels.
At that point, I don't even know what to say to that. I think the mask started slipping. At that point, I remember calling and, like, having discussions because there was editor issues, I think, around book two. When I got my first set of edits back, and I was crying because I'm like, I am so not the author for you. Like, let me out of the contract. I'll go. No hard feelings. Like, just let me go. And I got a whole, no, you totally are. We'll talk there. Oh, my God. You know, this whole thing. And so the mask went back up. So there was always this, it slips, it comes back. It slips, it comes back. Because there were things that would just happen that they could always kind of talk me out of. And this is where I've learned, don't feel right. It probably isn't. And I wanted this to work so badly because I kept thinking it's me. Like, it didn't go well with the first one because it was a friend and there was a lot of extenuating circumstances. I wanted to make it work so badly with the second one that even though my brain was going, something's not right here, don't give them anymore, something's not right, I kept thinking this is me being paranoid. It's, you know, it's post-traumatic stress, let it go. And when I asked what the marketing plan was, I emailed the marketing person and for months never got a response. And then out of the blue, I got some, I think it was like, oh, here's people who signed up for your first chapter, or they did some newsletter thing. And he sent it to me. And I'm like, what do I do with this? And I remember emailing him back and going, great, can we have a call about what the marketing calendar is? And I never heard from him. And then it was, oh, we did an announcement about book three or something, and all it was from a book tour I had done, and they just reposted a Bookstagrammer's review, or cover reveal, I think it was, on Twitter.
I mean, that is marketing, if we want to get technical. That is
and
certainly
like,
marketing. That is the path
like,
to take.
You didn't do it. They did it.
Exactly.
Like, and I paid for that tour, so how does this count? And then I started hearing that they were going to do ads, but the ads never surfaced. And then I believe the ad was supposed to be with you, with your book.
Mm-hmm.
That, that we were both supposed to have Amazon ads, but that never happened. And I remember asking for receipts and when will I see them? And there was always an excuse. And once again, it was like, but then I was always talked down like, oh, don't worry about it. We're totally handling this. We love you. Oh my God, we love you so much. And your books are so wonderful. And then I did a group call that you were on mm-hmm. for a certain podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And the question came, out of all our authors, whose books do you think will end up on the screen first? And one of the major people in the organization went, Danielle's. And I saw our COO's face. He was not happy at all. And it went bright red and got pissed. And I looked around and I went, oh, this person is in so much trouble. And I looked around and everybody got real quiet. And it wasn't like, oh, my God, that's so cool. It was just, like, you could see me kind of backing away. And you
literally said, that's
amazing.
I was super supportive. And then I, too, got the glares, which I had become accustomed to.
This is about to explode and I'm so here for it. And you were mugging at that camera, like, wait till you see what happens. And I'm like, something just exploded in here, and I'm not quite sure what happened. And after that, I could no longer get a call. I couldn't get answers to questions, and I started noticing mm-hmm. things tilt. And you warned me, and you went, be careful. You're going to see it. And I'm like, see what? And you were like, just wait. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just noticed little things. And that's when the X's popped up in my book. In the middle of the page.
Yeah.
Things
so
like that.
One of the crazy things is, you know, you get excited as an author and you,
yes,
or as a writer, right? Because they always say you're mm-hmm. a writer until you're published and then you're an author. You get excited and you
yes.
hear these amazing things and you get all of this amazing information and you're super excited. And you're like, I made it. This is the moment. And one of the important things to do, and something that Corey always told me, was you need to decide what makes you decide that you made it. And it has to be realistic. It can't be like, I haven't – it can be a goal, but it has to be like, your first thing can't be, I made it when I hit New York Times. Because you can buy those places, guys.
Right.
I don't care what anybody says. You can buy those places. You got 50 yes. grand to throw down, like, boom, you're New York bestsellers. But – mine was, I just wanted it out. Like, I didn't care because I was at a different point in my life at that point. I didn't care. I let a lot of things slide that I knew was going on. Mm-hmm. And then you have that moment when, and it's different for everybody, but you have that moment where you sit in, I grew up in the South, so they call it a come to Jesus moment, mm-hmm. where they tell you, like, this is the moment that you realize something has to change. And so mine hit, Danny, you know, but so I had a moment mm-hmm. where it was, this isn't worth it. It's not, it's not doing what I want it to. And so I got more active and I realized they need me more than I need them. I hit mm-hmm. 50 on the Amazon bestsellers list and I got zero mm-hmm. sales. They said it was clicks. I hit 50.
Yes.
And was
they
told
said, well,
I sold nothing. It was click.
What the explanation was. It was interest, not sales.
Yes, interest, not sales. The list, as everybody knows, is called the bestsellers list on Amazon. Sellers being the key word.
Not interest.
It was like, oh, my God, this is going to be amazing. This is fantastic. The book's been out for 2 years, but, like, screw it. I actually care now, so I'm trying. Hit 50.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yes.
because I get my sales and I made $0. And they're like, no. That there's a highly misconceived understanding of what those lists are. It's actually clicks. So the mm-hmm. bestsellers list is not sales, it's not anything to do with that. Apparently it's clicks. And I lost my mind.
Yes.
Believe it or not, Danny, you were there. I believe I
yes.
called you at like 8 o'clock in the morning and lost my mind. But it was just
uh-huh.
one of those times when I realized there's something hinky. Like there is something that is not right. There is something not uh-huh. adding up. this doesn't make sense. I don't understand what's going on. And you get a million different things about, you know, Amazon takes time, all these booksellers take time. Cool. They placate you for about, if you have any personality like I do, about 3 seconds. And then you're going to go storming down and you're going to go tattletale, as I do, to my husband and tell him. And he's like, no, 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 remain calm. It's fine. He looks into it. About 4 seconds later, he's on the phone. Because one of the great things of the many jobs that Corey has is he is also a literary agent. I got more answers in that moment than I had the entire 2 years I had been published. And that's when I realized everything that publishers tell you is a lie in some way, shape, or form. They're like really good honeypots. And so they pull you in with these great, grander things that you could do. And you can absolutely be that. I am not saying all publishers are that way. 99.999999 are. But there is so much that you have to throw in trust-wise for people. And I feel like once you break it, it is nearly irreparable. You can't do it. Now, I'm locked in for one more book because I've, I have freaking 10 books I have to do and, like, all that whole thing. But it makes you second-guess and second-trust every publisher there is. One of the number one things, and I don't know if you agree, Danny, I would tell you, get a literary agent. Don't get one of the bougie ones, one of the ridiculous ones. If you need one, reach out to Immortal Z Agency. You need somebody that's going to advocate for you, not for the money you make, not for whatever, but for the love of just breaking down publishers. And this can sound really bad, and I'm pretty sure no publisher is ever going to touch me again, but that's fine. I'm cool with it. You have to get somebody that's born for you. Because you've dealt with literary agents. They don't always, they do the same thing as publishers. They are just looking for you to pay them.
And that's not
what it's supposed to be.
No, you need somebody on your side. I left, we had a choice to stay or go because the second publisher, and I'm just going to refer to them that way because my lawyer said to do, they were changing their business model. We received an email saying you can stay or go. No harm, no foul. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, so we had been told from the day we signed, you are celebrities now. I finally went, well, I'm going to act like one. And I gave all the information, I gave it to my lawyer. And I went, I've been told I am now a celebrity. I am going to act like one, and I'm going to give it to you. And they went, thank you, and took it all, and they did a deep dive and came back to me and said, you're leaving. And I went, oh, okay. And I, because at this point I was like, I cannot be trusted to make a decision. I'm going to think with my heart and not my head because I'm paranoid about everybody. So,
well,
I'm
no, then that's opposite, Danny. You don't think with your heart when you're paranoid. You think with your head.
Oh, no, I thought with my heart because I'm just like, my heart is screaming. My stomach is screaming, and I can't listen to the logic inside my head. So that's why I was like, I can't be trusted. So here you go. Because I'm having flashbacks of what happened the first time. I'm scared. No, I need someone else to make this decision who can look at all the information and tell me because right now I'm going to look at every little thing and question you. And I can't do
and
that
right
should.
Now. And you should. And that is exactly what every author should do or aspiring author or whatever it is you want to do. You need to be as now you got to be realistic. I have helped Corey work through some of these authors and some of them are so dumb. But you have to be realistic. You deserve to know what they're going to do for you every step of the way. And if they say they don't have that, that is not the publisher for you. It is not an open publisher. They're going to do something sketchy. There is no reason, except for now I will say I'm still bitter about marketing plans because I still don't have one. But marketing does change. So when I was told, you know, we'll give you a marketing plan once we get your book. We know what to market for. We know all of those things. It's like, okay, your completed thing. You make a plan. However, one of the stipulations you should put in there is when you receive that marketing plan, what updates you get. There is no reason that I should hit a 50 on the entire store and not make anything. Because they will hit you with different things and they will call all of these things. You can negotiate your contract, redline the hell out of it. Because that is your right. That doesn't mean you got to, again, be reasonable. that doesn't mean they're going to take everything that you say. However, you have made your stance clear, and you are always able, just remember, everybody, you can self-publish. Because at the end of the day, and publishing, you do more for you than your publisher will ever do. They do not do the stuff that you used to do in the 50s, 70s, 90s, even early 2000s. They don't do that anymore. It is all on the
author. You're not getting a big check.
You're not. You're not going to get – no. And so all of that marketing is on you. It is all on you. It is your time. It is your effort. They're going to pretend that it's theirs, but it's not. Demand receipts for everything that they do, which you are legally allowed to do, by the way, at least in all of the states that I have worked in. You are allowed to know what they are doing.
The other thing is most contracts now are first right of refusals on your second book. So they may say, we want a trilogy. It doesn't mean you're getting the trilogy. And that came from one of the
contract.
Big three that I was offered for both of the say.
Big five.
It was, we want the first one. Second one is a first right of refusal. And I was like, wait a minute, what happens if the first one doesn't sell well? Oh, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only offered marketing for the first month if the book hit certain milestones, which, to be honest, for a new debut author, looks next to impossible. After that,
and you have to reimburse.
Marketing.
If you,
yes,
the
like
biggest
a
thing
deal.
That people don't understand is if by some miracle the stars and gods have rained down upon you and you get a signing check, if you do not sell enough books within a certain allotted of time, which will be in your contract, to cover what they pay you, you have to pay that back, guys. So pay attention. Get a literary agent. Mm-hmm. If you need somebody, reach out to us. We have people we can direct you to, because we have gone through the pain and the agony of all of this and are sharing it so that you don't have to. That is the entire point of this show, aside from sharing all of our hilarious stories that were not funny in the moment, but are funny now.
But
and
are
still
funny now.
Keep us up at night. They
get
make
an IP.
That's all
if
that
you
matters.
Don't get an IP lawyer, do not just get a corporate lawyer or your friend who's a lawyer to look at your contract. Get an IP lawyer who knows this stuff. I've made that mistake. I have IP lawyers now. They go through everything. It has made a huge difference. But just realize at the end of the day, it's your work. No one is going to care about your work the way you do. And the publisher has to keep their lights on. They don't care about keeping your lights on. So when they tell you it's a 60-40 split or 50-50 or 80-20, remember, that's not including all the little things that they're not disclosing. So
the million fees are going to do.
All that other stuff, they got to take out their stuff.
Exactly.
There's so much more to it. That one day we are going to pull a TLC and break this down and show you, like, here, this is what a residual, like, I'll show you a royalty statement. We'll block out the name, but we'll show you a royalty statement and how messed up it can be. And I got no problem doing that now.
Right.
There's a lot more to this.
Right. And at the end of the day, if you need somebody and you happen to be listening to the show and you're trying to do it, reach out to us, because we do have people that will change contracts, will change your lives as an author. We do the pop-up bookshop, which means we work with indie authors, self-published in everything. So we are also authors, which a lot of people like to do these podcasts. They're not actually authors. They just really want to be. No hate on them. It's hard. It sucks. Terrible life decision. If you have that book or you have that contract and you need somebody to reach out and just look at it for you, reach out to us. We don't charge to look at contracts. We don't charge to look at any of that stuff. So take that chance.
And if
you are genuinely looking to do it, it will save you heartache and pain at the end of the day.
Reach out to us on Instagram at Wonder Twin Events. You can always DM us on there. And then if you're in the Richmond area, Richmond, Virginia, check us out next week, March 15th through the 17th. We will be at GalaxyCon at the convention center. Look for us at the pop-up bookshop. And then next week we will be back for the show. We're still doing a show next week, even though we'll be setting up. And next week's topic is mob mentality. And that we're just going kind of the mean girl stuff all over again and what happens when you are with the publisher. And maybe you're causing some waves. So check us out next week. If you're in the Richmond area, come down to GalaxyCon Richmond and come to the booth. Talk to us then. We'll also be doing panels. Some of them are writing panels. Some of them are just fun panels. So check us out. We'll see you next week, guys. Same time, same place. Mob mentality. Have fun. Have a great day.
Bye, guys.